Mini episode 410 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
30 seconds.
In front of all these people, you're going to pull out a gun and you're going to shoot an unarmed man.
20 seconds.
So what are you going to do? 10.
Welcome to the FDH Lounge and the Justified episode recap.
It was justified.
With your original dignitaries.
Fire in the hole!
Rick Morris and Jason Jones.
You got ice cold water running through your veins.
Breaking down each Justified episode the moment they've concluded.
Did you take a peek inside the soul of Raymond Newton?
We're just gonna let that old dog lie.
Real-time reactions. Next level analysis.
You seem to be harboring a bit of hostility there, brother.
So I've been told.
And now, your dignitaries.
Well, I believe we can take her from here.
Welcome, everyone, to the FDH Lounge. This is, of course, your Justified Season 5 review. Rick Morris and Jason Jones, your FDH Lounge dignitaries in residence. Before we get started here, I want to include something at the top of the program. I'm going to put this here, strangely enough, so that people can feel free to check this out without being spoiled about Justified. We have a little something special for you here. This is what I would call the FDH presentation of You'll Never Leave Harlan Alive, although it's kind of strange to describe it as that because, again, very few things FDH do not have my fingerprints on them, very few things, and yet this has none of my fingerprints on it. This is all the effort of my partners. This is a wonderful job that they have done. It is a Jason Jones production, wonderful producing job by an absolutely peerless individual who handles our in-house production. And vocals from FDH Entertainment editor Samantha Jones, Jason's wife, of course. And this is with the Ruby Friedman Orchestra. You heard this at the end of the season finale, this version of You'll Never Leave Harlan Alive. We have for you here our FDH remix. Jason took care of the production on this, and it is, of course, Samantha's voice on there. And it is a wonderful job of it. Like I say, I want people to be able to hear this without being spoiled about what happened this year on Justified, because we've all got a lot of friends who want to check out the show and haven't done so yet. I don't want anybody to have to wade through the spoilers, what happened season 5. I want people to be able to hear this right at the top. So we're going to play this, and then we're going to get back to you right afterwards.
That's the place where I traced my bloodline, and it's there I read on a hillside gravestone, you will never leave Harlan alive.
All right, and we are back, and Jason, a wonderful job on the production with that. Again, very proud of you for the production, as always. Very proud of Samantha for a tremendous job of singing and a great version that the Ruby Friedman Orchestra had at the end of Justified this year. There's always a different version of You'll Never Leave Harlan Alive. It's amazing how many cover versions there are, and very proud that we can add our own little flavor to the mix.
Yeah, it's my little singing diva there.
That tremendous job. That was, like I said, I wanted people to be able to hear that at the outset before we even got going, because I think this is something that has appeal even to non-Justified fans or people who aren't yet Justified fans. Let's be optimistic. Let's say that eventually down the road, everybody will discover this show, because it took you 4 seasons to get into it yourself. You did, of course, in the last off season. You inhaled the first 4. You came into this one pretty optimistic. I did, too. The 4th season, I think we both agreed, had been the best in the history of the show. And, again, this one in my book, and I think reading you correctly in your book as well, was not the best season of Justified. And again, we've had a chance to breathe, to think about this as we indicated that we would since the end of the season here. I've got it slotted as fourth place among the seasons. I would say season four, season two, season three, season five, and then season one. I think most people have season one as last place. But for the reasons we talked about all year long, it was a nonlinear season. You had to watch it in kind of a different way. You couldn't really see the progression of what was happening. We kept talking about how the path was fuzzy all year long. And again, it was, in terms of the villains of the show, or the lead villain for this year, Darryl Crowe Jr., if you stack him up against Mags Bennett, Robert Quarles, Nicky Augustine as the lead villains of past seasons, I think most people would figure that the Crowe family at all probably did not stack up to them. And even less Rachel and Tim than usual this year. We always talk about how they're underplayed, and Graham Yost, the executive producer and showrunner, has promised that will not be the case in season six. He said there will be a lot of Rachel and Tim, but this year seemed to be a little bit worse than usual in that regard. So again, not to dump on it, but that's basically where I'm coming from on this. I'm certainly not sour on the show. As I've indicated, everything from my point of view comes from the idealism of I want a great show like this to have the greatest season ever every year out. And again, I'm feeling a little bit disappointed that it didn't connect on that level, while it was still something that I really enjoyed week in and week out just because it was justified and I love it.
Well, let me backpedal a second and I'll catch back up. Just as a quick side note, microcosm of how great this show is, my wife has absolutely no desire to watch a show, at least in the beginning, that is described as you would describe Justified. And last week, right about the time you had posted the Ruby Orchestra version of that song, within an hour she had probably heard the song 20 times and was like, that's amazing. And to me, that's just one sort of staple of this show, is that you can take somebody that doesn't have any interest and give them one little nugget, and now she's like, we got to finish Breaking Bad so we can start watching Justified, which is absolutely fine by me. Along the lines of the progression of the seasons, I agree wholeheartedly with you. I think most people, from a gut reaction, would say that season five was the worst, and I think that's only because the show grows and we're forgetting just how pedestrian season one was. And I say that with tons of affection. It's just that in any show like this, more often than not, you have to have that. We have to see Raylan sort of figuring out his role in the new field office. We have to see how he works with his coworkers. We have to see him working on cases so that we can get to the bigger picture stuff. So it's not necessarily fair to say, but yeah, season one was, in hindsight, once you've seen everything we've seen to date, season one was very kind of boring, but it was necessary to get where we are. And the fact of the matter is, and not to keep plugging another show, but we realistically cannot have the expectation, or at least maintain it, of a Breaking Bad, where they get you from the moment you start, and it grows and grows and grows in a linear fashion till the end, which I still haven't seen, where it's this big crescendo that I'm assuming. And there is no lag or drop down. Whereas in Justified, you can make the argument that season four was phenomenal and season five was different and didn't measure up. And that's probably fair. But with all that being said, as I've said numerous times before, I think that season five is not in a vacuum unto itself. I think season five will bleed into season six, and it'll be more of a continuation, which we'll get to, I'm sure. And as to your point about the Crows, I have to go back and watch the whole thing again. As I mentioned, I will be doing so before season six airs. But I'm actually inclined to say that Darryl Crowe Jr. specifically, and moreover the Crowe family with Danny and Dilly and all the others, I'm almost inclined to say that I will probably ultimately rank them just a hair above Augustine. And maybe that's because you didn't see him as much, or maybe it's just because he wasn't as big a character maybe as the other two that you mentioned, Mags Bennett and Robert Quarles. I think Mags Bennett and Quarles are literally like in whatever order you put them in, or 1A, 1B. And I think the Nicky Augustine thing was a phenomenal storyline, and it was great how it worked together, but him on his own, I don't think carries as much weight as maybe Danny Crow does when we've had a little time to let this sort of marinate. With that said, though, clearly season 5 was at best the fourth best season if we look at it in a vacuum. And as you've sort of alluded to, that said, I don't have a problem with it. It's very rare that you have a series where beginning to end is phenomenal and gets better each time without some sort of lag. So I'm just hoping that season 5 did some things that we're not ready to talk about yet because it occurs in season 6.
Well, and you had said several weeks ago, and you kind of got me thinking this way, because, again, I keep making the point that my criticisms are coming from the point of view of great idealism and how much I love this show and how great I want it to be. And you were the one that put it in my mind weeks ago and in the mind of the listeners when you said, you know, there's only one Breaking Bad. Maybe we have to start to accept that. And once you do that, it makes it a lot easier to look at this season realistically. And, again, I think maybe the viewers did as well, because I can report back to you that, at least according to Wikipedia, there was a spike for the season finale, 2.37 million. The previous weeks had been 2.04 million, 2.05 million, 2.04 million. The drop-off came after Long Roads, 2.24 million for episode 5.9. So it took a while, but there was a spike back at the end of the season. Sometimes that's just people wanting to check it out one more time before the end of it. But, again, they left on a high note, and you would think that the retention of those viewers should be pretty good for next season. And, again, it was really a thing where, as it went along for the season, we talked about how foggy it was, and there were different aspects of it that, again, there was a lot of criticism online as far as how it shook out, in particular, Ava. When you look at everything with her, the whole thing of the Orange is the New Black storyline that she went through this year, and there were a lot of people that felt, again, it was derivative of a lot of other prison dramas and things that were out there. I have to say, I mean, I found it to be dragging kind of at times, plotting at different times, having its ups and downs. I mean, it didn't all suck. I don't mean to say that. There were parts of it that were really pretty good, and I guess I wouldn't describe suck for any of it. There were just parts that I thought were mediocre and parts I thought that were pretty good. But we talk about this again. We always come back to context. Every episode of this show represents like 1% of the entire series, and it's a highly structured type of serialized series. So you have to put it in the context. The way that it ended up, Ava's journey for this year, and we see where it's pointing into season 6, her going completely on her own and having to live without Boyd and having to make all of her own choices and decisions, now getting set up to be an informant in season 6, informing on Boyd. Do you look at her whole arc a little bit more kindly now that we know what it was setting up for?
Well, yeah, and I think all along I had this impression that we're doing this because of something else that is yet unseen. And the weird thing is, and I'll try to draw a parallel, it's not going to be quite parallel, but if you go back to the beginning and we're watching Boyd in his, you know, neo-Nazi version of himself, just blowing stuff up, and then the situation where when he runs his church and all of his guys are killed by Daddy's group, and so on, we build this scenario that we can look at now and see what Boyd is. And there was a scene in with Alberto towards the first half of last week's episode where Alberto's about to do the thing. He's talking about hunting and how you skin an animal and all this. And Boyd just says, I know real pain, so why don't you shut your mouth and do what you got to do? And I don't think we get there. I don't think that we grasp that moment if we hadn't seen the other things that Boyd had been through going ups and downs and going back to the coal mine and then resurging himself and taking over the group of the aristocrats of Harlan County and all of that. And I think it's the same thing with Ava. I think without knowing what's going to happen, I will be really let down if it's just Ava's an informant for the marshals. If, as you mentioned early on in the season when she first went in, maybe this is the hardening of Ava and this creates the new version of her that we see later. And I'm really hoping that's what it is. And if that's the case, then I'm all for it. If it was just we didn't know what to do with Ava, so we put her in prison for a little while, I'll be a little let down.
And I think we both agree that won't be the case. That clearly won't be. By the way, you had speculated about this weeks ago, and I did get some confirmation on this. Graham Yost doing a couple of interviews online after the season. You had speculated, you thought maybe season six was in the can, at least conceptually. Graham Yost confirmed every season, including the finale, they write it year to year. So they don't know at the moment where they're going. They're going to start up in July. The writers probably have some rough ideas, but they're starting from a blank canvas. And I'll come back to Ava in a second because I want to pick up on something you said there. But I wonder about, in looking back, we thought the Nikki Augustine thing at the end of last season had kind of resolved itself. And it really gave you that sense at the end that it was, they call it the blow-off in pro wrestling here, the last match of the feud. You really thought that was it. And then this season starts of like, oh, well, hey, somebody's going to try to drop a dime on Raylan. And that clearly came from they decided over the summer when they were writing again, hey, let's pick at the whole thread here with Nikki Augustine and what happened to him and let it go from there. So I'm just wondering, in terms of going into next year, how do you think that determines or may determine where they're going with some of this kind of stuff? The fact that Graham Yost, Timothy Oliphant, et cetera, are going to look at some of these things anew, and that there's some things that maybe we thought we might be seeing may not happen next year. I just wonder, in terms of the process, that seems to be kind of an interesting thing to look at here in terms of how they're doing it.
You know, I can't fathom the depth of what that means. And for the listeners, maybe that's just a single point that you accept and you move on. I don't think that we can do that, because if you really, really grasp what you just said, that they went through and when they started season five, they were like, okay, we're going to bring the crows back and week to week we'll figure this out and we do it however it falls. I just can't fathom, literally, the idea that you're writing these storylines and not leaving some notes or whatever to implications in the future. That's not to say I don't believe him. I'm absolutely sure that he's saying what they do. But I think maybe in the writing process, when they go back and they really kind of look at what they did in season four, it'll be easy to draw some conclusions or at least some idea of where to go. I do think that it's hugely impactful, though, for what this means, because this whole time I've been sort of operating under the premise that not only do they have some idea, but maybe they're doing these things specifically for things they'll do later, which is something that I'm sure anyone who's ever written a novel would relate to. Knowing that that's not the case, though, completely changes the game completely. I don't even have a concept of where you go from here. Other than to say that I trust what they've done to this point, and therefore I will trust what they'll do going forward.
That's a very good way of putting it, I think. And, yeah, they're going to have, obviously, an outline when they go into the season. I think they will start the season knowing where it's going to end up, particularly since it's the finale. But, yeah, everything that they do for next year will start to be crafted this coming July, and they'll be looking at it there. Before we move on to the two lead characters, and talk about them probably the majority of the rest of the time here, Raylan and Boyd, I want to get to one more thing about Ava. And in the spirit of what we were doing earlier in the show this season when I was doing the S.H.I.E.L.D. crossovers, once I had discovered the show The S.H.I.E.L.D. and inhaled it in the span of less than a month and really gotten to enjoy Walton Goggins' work on there, I have what's actually a non-Walton Goggins-oriented question for you, strangely enough. But I found another point of comparison from watching the show, and that is, lead character on there, Vic Mackey, as we know, a dirty cop. There are a couple of different instances during the show where there are cops working to take him down, whether it be undercover, whether it be from internal affairs. And I have to tell you that the audience regarded them as arch villains. And even when horrible things were done to them, regarded them like they're a rat. That character's a rat. They're trying to take down Vic Mackey. In my book, Boyd Crowder is a more sympathetic character than Vic Mackey. I mean, we're comparing two criminals here, but still, I think he's more sympathetic. Is there a possible viewer backlash that is coming against Ava next year for taking him down, even if she's doing what she has to do under the circumstances? It's going to be that she's taking him down to save her own neck. I just think that in light of what happened with the Shield, there may be a backlash coming against Ava that not the writers or the intelligentsia or anybody may see coming.
Here's the rare point that we glossed over and didn't touch on before that maybe we should have. I just assumed that that was sort of implied. Maybe not from the show's perspective, but as someone watching it, my first thought is, you know, not to go there, but oh, no, you didn't. Because this changes everything. I would imagine there's going to be some period of time where Boyd is none the wiser. And then there's going to come a point when Boyd's probably brought into the loop a little bit. And I think, yeah, anytime she does anything that crosses Boyd, because he is such a sympathetic bad guy, that I would imagine there's going to be people out there that go nuts. And the viewership of this show is a little bit more intelligent and really takes in the details. So I don't mean to make any sort of parallel here, but I'm just going to reference something that's unrelated completely. But I get the impression we're going to sort of go back to this Twilight phenomenon where people were like team so-and-so, team so-and-so. And I think you're going to see there are people there that are going to be all for Raylan succeeding. There will be people all for Boyd succeeding to whatever end. And anytime something violates Boyd's ability to move forward, i.e. Ava, people are going to rip her to pieces. And again, apologize for the non-related crossover here, but I got a feeling that she's going to quickly become Skylar White in a hurry as far as backlash goes.
Wow. That could be. That could be. And she's always been presented as a more sympathetic character.
Unless, Rick, this whole idea comes back to ultimately by episode 13 of next season, it's still Raylan versus Boyd, and somehow Ava does some sort of I'm going to try to use your terms, and I'm probably going to botch it up, but if she makes some sort of face turn of some sort where she's considered bad and she's absolutely someone that everyone loathes and how can she do this to Boyd, and she automatically flips the tables and screws over Raylan to save Boyd, then maybe we can come back to this Bonnie and Clyde relationship we all hoped would be there in the end.
Nice. I'm rubbing off on you by bringing the pro wrestling terminology into this. But, you know, I think legendary wrestler, trainer, broadcaster, et cetera, Les Detcher, I keep saying, I think he's got a point that they use a lot of the same tropes that they use in the pro wrestling world for this show. And I think it really benefits in doing so, the clarity of that. But I want to ask you this about Raylan and Boyd. I'm going to kind of go off the reservation here as far as an opinion that I haven't seen stated anywhere else, and I don't know if you're going to agree with me on this or not, but we talked about this, it might have been in the season premiere that we did when we were looking ahead to this year, looking back at the final conversation that they had in season 4, and about how, you remember we talked about that, Raylan and Boyd don't see each other for who they are. It's that they each have this sort of fixed thing here. To Boyd, Raylan is a self-righteous jerk with a badge. He's not any better than me. He's just a jerk who's got a badge and he takes out his anger that way. And to Raylan, Boyd is a one-dimensional criminal. You know, he's a criminal, he's a dirtbag, that's all he'll ever be. Neither one of them sees the shades of gray in one another that the audience does. We are able to perceive things about both of them that they don't perceive in one another. And now they're on the final path of confrontation. I have to tell you, just in doing my own little fan wanking here, I don't want to see it go the way, because I think that's where it could steer a little bit too much towards typical TV, of where the thing just gets brutally personal between them and final confrontation. You know, it's my wife's work to take him down. It's my wife's work to, you know, escape being taken down by him. I'm not going to let him get the better of me. I like to see something happen next year, whether it be Boyd somehow saving Raylan in a situation here, and even knowing that he's going to get it in the end now that Raylan's walked away, but something that allows them to see the shades of gray in one another that we see in them. That's what I want to see going into this, and that where each of them sees, you know what, okay, it's our destiny to go up against one another. Lawman versus criminal, it is what it is. We have to square off. But I don't want to see it be under what I would consider false pretenses. of where each of them goes into it with a completely false view of the other one. I guess I just like their views of one another to be more nuanced and, you know, it's coming down to this showdown because that's what's got to happen. That's the way the universe works, as opposed to, I hate this guy and I want to get him. Does any of that make sense to you?
Well, yeah, there's a ton of things working there. And if we're to sit here and sort of, you know, flow chart it out, that is an option. It is an option of just Raylan, although it would be absolutely hypocritical for him to get on his high horse and stick to his morals and say this guy is just a bad guy and bad things happen when he's around and therefore he must go down. That would be cheesy and it would almost be predictable. The other side, though, are a number of different turns we can take, one of which I'm actually really in favor of today, and this changes day to day, so we'll see. But the idea that maybe along the path in season six is that we start to see Raylan empathetic for some of the reasons. Maybe he starts to discover why Boyd does what he does. And Boyd has a certain skill set, but Boyd also has to look out for the people around him. And maybe there's a reason he does these things that's more than just creating carnage for the sake of creating carnage. It's kind of like the idea of a functioning alcoholic police officer trying to give a guy a DUI ticket. You know, maybe he's able to look at it and say, I'm not exactly 100% pure, and I can understand that. And what I would love to see, and I don't think they'll go this way, and I don't know how to explain it other than it was the end of the movie The Siege with we'll forget that. In this movie, The Siege, you have this whole situation. An Irish former IRA guy is helping the feds, but in the end, the whole thing is you're going to help us, you're going to be a good guy, and when it's over, you're going back to prison. And it's this thing where Sidney Poitier basically undoes his cuffs and says, you know, go. I'll tell him you escaped or whatever. Where you look at it and say, he's not going to be a problem anymore, but I'm also not going to be responsible for locking this guy up for the rest of his life and find a way to let him into the wind without taking the fall. That would be interesting. The other option, of course, is something that we're really not considering, and that is that Raylan completely goes the other way and just absolutely just drops the ball and says, screw it, I'm done with this place, I'm out, and whatever happens, happens, I don't care. And that's something I just don't see happening. I think it's somewhere between the predictable and we start to empathize with each other and find a means to an end that doesn't ruin someone's life.
Yeah, and I think it's just a deal where I like to look at it, and because you talk about that with the self-righteousness of Raylan, I'd like to see it to where I think the ending that most people want to see is that he gets the better of Boyd, takes him down, but to where Raylan at least has the decency to feel conflicted about it. The way that Boyd has always kind of summed it up, whenever it was Nicky Augustine or anybody else that asks about them, he says, we dug coal together. Okay, they were never best buddies, but you get the sense at one point in time they were close to a small extent anyways. Decent friends, if not, you know, best buddies, could empathize with one another. Both grew up as sons of the biggest criminals in town. I just like to see a little bit of conflict on Raylan's part about where he reaches the point of, I got to take this guy down, but I'm not going to necessarily celebrate when I do. Society will probably be better off, but I'm not going to take anything personally great from it. And to where Boyd respects Raylan enough before it happens to say, hey, look, man, he's a good lawman. He's just doing what he's got to do. I'm going to try and stay a step ahead of him, but I respect him for doing this. I guess I, you know, and some people might say that that's cheesy, but I agree with you that I think it would be cheesy to just go down the route of, okay, we hate each other now, it's personal, it's on. I think that would be cheesy and expected as far as continuing the path of these characters.
My biggest issue with all of this comes back to watching the way that we do. Now, let's be brutally honest here. The people watching Justified do not watch Housewives of Name That City, okay? So
yes.
Chances are people are watching and seeing details and keeping track, mental notes. And I think what you just said is probably bigger than the lack thereof, and that is the we dug coal together, the fact that they were brought up in a similar fashion, that Raylan left and came back, and it was like, and he was treated as if this is his backyard. I think, ultimately, even if they didn't intend it to be by design, I would not be surprised in the least if that plays a big part of it. I would go so far as to say I wouldn't be surprised if you heard the phrase, we dug coal together somewhere near the finale. Because those are the kinds of things that, even though they fit the storyline at the time, absolutely can help foreshadow something yet to come. And I think that that could be a big part of it. To say that he's conflicted, I think, is really sugarcoating it and putting it lightly. I think at some point the right way to do it is to come to grips with good versus evil while yet having a major conflict of conscience about it. Major. Maybe even over the course of a couple episodes.
Exactly. And again, and I don't find the nature of good versus evil to be cheesy in and of itself, but that's not the story we've been told for five seasons. The story we've been told for five seasons is that Raylan, there's some real gray there. He's a good guy. He's a superhero in the sense that, you know, if you're an innocent person, there's nothing he wouldn't do to try to help you. He's got a great moral compass. But some of the things that he'll do either in his off hours or relating to some other matters may or may not be exemplary. And that Boyd, again, relatively a stand-up guy for being the big criminal that he is. And again, outside of, and this is a big exception, outside of being a drug dealer, which inherently preys upon people that are really, I would still say, undeserving of being preyed upon. Aside from that, I mean, anybody Boyd's killing or doing harm to is pretty much other bad guys. So Boyd is relatively sympathetic if you want to go that far and take a look at it that way. And we're talking about the key relationships on the show also, too. We talked about that Boyd and Raylan both grew up with criminal fathers. And Boyd, in the end, has taken after Bo. And Raylan has never, thank God, taken after Arlo. But the guy who's kind of been his surrogate father was Art Mullen, and we did see a fallout in their relationship this year. It's interesting, as I alluded to earlier, you didn't get any kind of sense that the Nicky Augustine thing was going to flare up again in season five. They gave you no indication. They were probably thinking it was dead and buried until they sat down to write season five. We saw when they did that it was not dead and buried along with Nicky Augustine, and that the threads of it, the people that were there and that could identify Raylan as being a co-conspirator, were able to do so. And the chatter caused – it got back to Art Mullen, and ultimately he had the falling out with Raylan when Raylan was a little bit too honest about it, if not explicitly honest, in putting Art in a situation where he would have had to do something about it. Subsequently, Art gets shot, and the fact that they weren't working together meant that Art didn't have Raylan as backup. So there were some real consequences to it. So what are your thoughts about, again, how the relationship between Art and Raylan deteriorated through the course of the season? They looked like they were on somewhat better terms by the end. Art did seem to appreciate that Raylan had avenged his shooting and gotten the guy who did it. But thoughts about how that arc played out this year and what we can look forward to in the end game between Art and Raylan?
Well, my initial gut reaction is going to seem really petty. But as it deteriorated early and quick, I kind of thought, you know, why don't you grow a pair, Art? Act like an adult. Because regardless of what you think of Raylan and his background, what caused him to be in Harlan to begin with, or Kentucky at all, he has a great dynamic of doing what's right, even if he has to do something wrong to get there. And ultimately, I think that would be viewed by most as a good quality, as opposed to, you know, caving when it gets a little tough. So when Art sort of got really pissed about the Nicky Augustine thing and that changed his whole view of Raylan, it became the whole, it's that situation where a parent tells their, you know, teenage child, I wash my hands of the situation. Really? You really going to do that? Because Raylan's the best thing you've got. He's doing a good job. He's trying to take down the big bad elements. And even if he has to do so by means that are less than ideal, he's still getting the job done. So I kind of thought it was petty. Now, it could be almost that parental relationship you spoke of a minute ago, where Art's almost playing surrogate father to Raylan, and that's fine. But in the end, they absolutely have to come to, you know, an amicable ending. Either Art has to forgive him just on his own volition, or Raylan has to have a moment where he's like, look, I understand I put you in a tough spot, but, and we have to get to a point where, not to be cheesy, but they can walk off into the sunset in whatever means that is. But this can't continue. I don't think it does continue. But my reaction is that it was a little bit petty on the part of a supervising officer, if you will, viewing one of his guys doing his job and maybe stepping over the line a little bit.
The thing is, I don't think the audience would disagree with you on that. And I don't think that we were necessarily meant to think that Raylan was in the wrong, because the one thing that was pretty damn clear from watching this is you do it Art's way and Wynonna and the baby are dead, because Nicky Augustine, the Detroit mob, they were that damn good. You go back to that scene that you referenced at the end of last year, how you gasped and I think almost woke somebody up at your place when Picker materialized there within the nursery at the very end of the episode. They made it into Wynonna's place twice. They would have gotten her. Anything short of Witsec, and we saw actually earlier in the season the holes in Witsec in what was kind of a standalone episode when Art's associate ended up getting killed, one of the fellow marshals, by somebody that was in Witsec. They were going to get Wynonna and the baby. So the odd thing of it is, for all the things that we criticize Raylan for and for being a kind of passive, crappy, afraid dad at this point here, of just being afraid that he's carrying Arlo germs, I guess, that he's just going to infect this infant with. For all the things we can criticize him for and for being kind of emo about his problems, I don't think we're meant to criticize him for that. He did what he had to do with Nicky Augustine, and I think the audience gets it even if Art didn't, which is a very, very interesting way of painting it. But I don't think we're meant to disagree with what you said at all.
Yeah, you know, then this whole dynamic, it's interesting, it's brittle, and it's one of these things that has to play out the way that it does, and it's a genius move by the means of the creators of this show that they're taking us on that ride. But yeah, I would have to agree that I think most people, when they watched the Nicky Augustine end, absolutely felt that that was the best course of action. And as we mentioned earlier with Boyd and Raylan, it's a similar thing. At some point, either one of them or both of them is going to have to sort of empathize with what the other had to do. Because if we go back and go point by counterpoint, like you're mentioning here, yeah, there's no way that even if it means Raylan loses his job or does time, there's no way that he allows Wynonna and the baby to die because he's stuck to the rules. That just wasn't going to happen. And if Art absolutely believes still that that's a wedge that can't be breached, then he's absolutely off his rocker and should retire.
I think, again,
like,
for Art, it's
like he wants to do
it
anyway.
which he's going to. Yeah, I think it's just excessive faith in the system. Art is just a guy who, and again, it's been alluded to on the show that in the earlier days, Art definitely had a little bit of Raylan in him. And to the extent that he's been as indulgent with him as he has over a period of time, it's because of that. He sees some of himself in Raylan. But I think he's at the point now where he thinks, but I turned it around at some point. I grew up, and when is Raylan going to do the same? I think it's part of a larger kind of a sense of disappointment in Raylan. And hopefully that's what we're building to at the end of season six. I'm hopeful that Raylan's final journey really kind of completes these steps as far as growing up and as far as getting it together. And it's interesting also when you look at that office dynamic, if it's a father-son thing there, in a way that sort of makes Tim and Rachel the siblings. And you think to yourself off the top, well, are they as screwed up as Raylan is? I don't know. Tim keeps alluding to the PTSD that he feels from coming back from Afghanistan and the pressure of it. And Rachel, not much was said about it since then, but in season four it was announced that she had gone through a divorce. So they got their own issues. And now Rachel's at the top of the food chain in the office until Art comes back, if he does, before he retires. So the bomb was dropped with them, too, by Nicky Augustine. Boyd pointed the finger at Raylan in front of them. They brushed it off. They kept the blue wall intact in Boyd's presence. But you think to yourself, and knowing that they're going to play a bigger part in the final season, is there going to be a little bit of dissension on their part because they don't know the full story about what Raylan or why Raylan did what he did.
You know, I got to say at this juncture, maybe I'm just over the top a fan of this show, but if Art retires and Raylan moved on, and that's how it ends, I would still watch a show about the U.S. Marshals Office in Kentucky, where your head honcho is Rachel, and Tim Gutterson is essentially the new Raylan. I would absolutely watch that. That said, I do think that there has to be something coming with the Gutterson thing because they've mentioned it so frequently, within respect to how frequently anything about Gutterson is mentioned. And even in this final episode we just saw, there was that moment where he's confronted outside and he's telling that story about how he and his spotter had to watch a guy for 4 days or whatever. And, you know, sitting in this truck is going to be, you know, peaches compared to that. So, you know, go do what you got to do. There's a sense that there's always a darkness around the corner. And I hope they do something with that. Rachel, I get the impression Rachel's more sort of in line. She knows exactly what she needs to do, what she's supposed to do, and her personal baggage going all the way back to her brother, I think it was.
Yes.
I want to say season two, maybe. Even that was sort of compartmentalized. She had an emotional response. She wanted to take care of it, but at the end she still has to do her job, and she's fine with that. So I don't know where it goes, but I absolutely think that those two characters are fine where they are, and I'd like to see them continue in the same direction they've been in, and just want to see more of it.
And that's the great thing. We are going to see more of them next year. I'd like to make a note here again. I've been doing the periodic thing going throughout the season here of correcting myself when I go to listen to the tape later on and I pick up on something. Doing this in real time always meant doing this at 11 o'clock Eastern time and generally after a long day for me, so I was prone to a couple of these things. I had another goof last week as far as a misstep. I said that Elmore Leonard had said something over the summer when, of course, it was Graham Yost, the showrunner, that was talking about this, about the crows being like an invasive species in Harlan this year, coming up from Florida as they were in the Everglades. And again, I have to put you over one more time, Jason, because I've rarely seen this alluded to, although I think Graham Yost did talk about it after the season in the AMA Reddit thing that he did, about how Darryl Crowe Jr., Michael Rappaport, for as much as everybody criticized him for the accent that he had, was actually rocking a relatively accurate Florida Everglades accent, which you, as a former resident of Florida, had pointed out on the program. So very proud of you to see Graham Yost make mention of that as well, that for the people that are criticizing it, hey, it's not supposed to be a Kentucky accent. It's supposed to sound a little different, and that is what these guys sound like. It's been really a lot of fun going through the season here, and I'm just taken aback by the notion, first of all, that we're done with this season, even with the two extras that we did, bookending this with a preview and a review of it. That brings us to 15 parts this year for a 13-part show, so I'm very proud about that we made it through as we did. And at an average of 40 minutes a pop, which this is going to come to almost on the nose, we're going to do a separate thing here at the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine. We've been putting these up piece by piece, but we're going to do a box set, as we do for a lot of our series. It's going to be 10 hours, almost to the minute. And people, you can add this up if you don't believe me. If you want to take the time to go do that and fact-check this, you can. So 10 hours of breaking down Justified Season 5. And again, every minute of it was a lot of fun to me and was very satisfying because we set out to do something great. And I feel like we did. So my hat's off to you, Jason. This is the first time you've done one of these things. I've done these with Kyle Ross and with Nate Noy previously, looking at Mad Men and Breaking Bad. But this was your first time out. And, you know, competitively, you kept me going week after week. It was like, but damn it, Jason had a really good point last week. I got to dig deeper to keep up with this guy. So great job, and this was a lot of fun.
Well, yeah, and I hope it's not, you know, the end game because, you know, next season is going to be phenomenal, I think. And then the
yes.
series recap we may need a lot of time for. My wife thinks we should do an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I think that the ball just keeps rolling. We may have to do this for every top-notch quality program there is, making us
absolutely.
Very busy.
Absolutely. And I like the idea also, too, of I know there are some podcasts out there that do their own sort of DVD version things here, commentaries, to where you can play it along with something. I would like to at some point possibly here record something with you. Maybe we sit down, we watch Decoy together over the
sure.
phone and record that. That would be a lot of fun, whether it be Decoy, whether it be some of the other ones that are in the series here. That would be a different aspect of it as well.
It would, and it would make it for another great fan avenue.
Deep, dark hills of eastern Kentucky. That's the place where I traced my bloodline. And it's there I read on a hillside gravestone, you will never leave Harlan alive. My granddad's dad crossed the Cumberland Mountains, and he asked Tilly Helton to be his bride. He said, won't you walk with me out of the mouth of this holler, or we'll never leave Harlan alive. The sun comes up about 10 in the morning, and the sun goes down about 3 in the day, and you fill your cup with whatever bitter brew you're drinking, and you spend your life just thinking how. Wasn't selling, and old granddad knew what he had to do to survive. He went and dug for Harlan coal and sent the money back to Granny, but he never left Harlan alive. Where the sun comes up about 10 in the morning, and the sun goes down about 3 in the day, and you fill your cup with whatever bitter brew you're drinking, and you spend your life digging coal from the bottom of your grave. Where the sun comes up about 10 in the morning, and the sun goes down about 3 in the day, and you fill your cup with whatever bitter brew you're drinking, and you spend your life digging coal from the bottom of your grave. Deep dark hills of eastern Kentucky, that's the place where I trace my bloodline, and it's there I read on a hillside gravestone, you will never leave Harlan alive.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Paper Mate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.